from downtown Youngstown at Youngstown Studios. This is the 330 Sports Show, and it is Tuesday, August 16th, 2022. On today's show, it's going to be sort of Cleveland-centric. I will have a kind of a fun Top 5 Tuesday at the end of the show with some current TV shows and things that we're going to share. But it's going to be fairly heavy on the Browns and on the Cleveland Guardians as well. So we will stick to that today. On Thursday, I still got to link up with him, but I think we're going to have Steve Leslie preview some of the high school football slate that is coming up. Believe it or not, I mean, it's here. So football season is underway. Obviously, preseason football is underway in the NFL. College is just a few weeks from kicking off. Camps are well on their way. Like, you know, the Browns just opened up this past weekend. The Steelers just opened up this past weekend. As I said earlier, too, you know, high school football will be here this weekend as soon as Thursday. And Ohio State and Notre Dame kick off in just several weeks over Labor Day weekend. So this past weekend, you know, the Browns go down to Jacksonville. And, you know, I think anybody that's a Browns fan or just a casual NFL fan in general knows the Browns are in limbo right now, you know, with the whole Deshaun Watson thing, with not knowing who their quarterback is. And it's just kind of a mess, unfortunately. And, you know, the Browns did this move for one reason and one reason only. It wasn't to make the Jacksonville Jaguars fans boo Deshaun Watson on the field. It was to make the product on the football field a better one. Now, you bring in arguably a top five talent in the league, whether that is at the quarterback position or just in general as a player with Deshaun Watson. There is plenty of off-the-field distractions. I think the team is feeling it a little bit now because they're getting asked about it by the media every day. Obviously, you're going into Jacksonville in the first preseason game, and you're getting booed, and there's some nasty chants going on with Deshaun taking the field for the first time in, I believe it was 19 months since January of 2021, early January of 2021. So it's been a mess. Now, the Browns acquired, let me put this into perspective. The Cleveland Browns acquired Deshaun Watson, I believe it was March 16th. Ohio State basketball was still alive in the March Madness tournament. That's how long ago this was. So that, you know, we're going all the way back to St. Patrick's Day practically when this, you know, acquisition took place. This was after the two grand juries dismissed the charges. The NFL really did nothing up to that point. And I heard Jim Donovan speaking, you know, in the pregame, and he said, basically, to this point, it's kind of getting almost cruel what they're doing to the Browns. Now, I know fans that don't like Deshaun Watson or maybe, you know, his actions off the field. I can understand. It's like, well, screw him, whatever, this and that. Yeah, that's all well and fair. But the point I'm trying to make is, make a decision with your suspension. You waited. 13 teams were interested and made pleas for Deshaun Watson. 13 teams. So that is over a third of the entire NFL, you know, reached out, you know, put feelers out there. No pun intended, Joe. but, you know, The whole point I'm trying to make is you had a third of your league trying to acquire this football player. You gave them no response, recourse, what would happen with this decision. And then, you know, he narrowed it down to four teams. Those four teams met with him privately. And then, you know, the Browns were kind of eliminated. Then, you know, they swooped back in and made a kind of like a sweetener with their offer with guaranteed money. They bring him in and they acquire his services. Now, you have this elite quarterback, and the Browns, I knew, were going to, anticipate a suspension. They were going to get some PR backlash, and I get all that, as they should. But at this point, we're talking 6 months. Well, so it's August 16th today. So we're talking exactly 6 months ago. They acquired this guy thinking, okay, he's going to get suspended. We give up 3 first-round draft picks, a couple later-round picks, and it's like, all right, but we have our quarterback of the future, which we, let's hypothetically say, he's suspended for the season. They still have him for a very, very long time, and the trade was not made for just this year in particular. But Joe, like, from a non-off-the-field issue, I guess you have to bring that in. The NFL's just kind of like, I don't know. To me, it feels like they're putzing around and just not doing the Browns any favors, and they shouldn't have to do them any favors, but this is one of your premier franchises in the league. And when I say that, any team that's in the NFL is a premier franchise, because these teams are just money makers for the league. What are they doing here?
I can't even reverse engineer it and explain what benefit they would get by holding out. I mean, lots of benefit in letting everybody know early enough. So this commodity and a player, they know how to make good decisions with it. Why don't they just wait till like game 6 in the regular season to announce? I mean, how stupid is this going to get? If they wait, I don't know. I'm just so frustrated with that.
It's really frustrating, I think, from a team building standpoint, because, there's rumors out there. Are they going to acquire Jimmy Garoppolo? Are they going to do this? Are they going to do that? The Browns obviously have a lot of cap money, but there's not just good quarterbacks available this time of year. You know, right. You need to acquire those guys in the off season. You need to make plans.
You know what? I think about it too. Like, if there wasn't all this controversy, Browns would have never been a contender, no matter what they paid for Deshaun Watson.
Sure.
The only reason it is because the other teams don't want to deal with the shit that we're dealing with right now.
Exactly. And another part of this is the team he was with, the Houston Texans, sort of reaped the rewards and the benefits. They had 30 plus civil lawsuits filed against them for enabling his behavior. And, what are those called? Like a non-disclosure agreements, things like that, were given to some of the massage therapists. And do they have any recourse for this action? The Dallas Cowboys a few years ago had a high up team employee videotaping cheerleaders changing in the locker room. Like, this was a high up executive, and you don't hear anything about that. That's swept under the rug. No fine, no penalty. There might have been like a $2 million fine, which to the Cowboys organization, that's a drop in the bucket. You know, that's like a normal person going out for dinner. You know what I mean? So it's like, I just don't understand what the NFL is thinking. There's no like apples to apples in these situations.
Well, let me make an accusation then. Maybe this one, me, little Joe Danier, is going to make them make a decision.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe this is like the WWE, right? The NFL wants to see how everything shakes down. And if they can use their decision as an equalizer to give somebody an advantage in the AFC or do something by their decision, they're seeing how it weighs out for a performance start thing. Hmm. They could be manipulating it.
Well, okay, I can see where you're coming from that point, but to me, it's just like this does no one any good. You know, it's like it's almost making I feel like the league has to toe that line of taking a hard stance against abuse against anyone, especially women, and they're trying to grow their female fan base. I get that 100% completely. But the point is, make a decision, right? Stick with it. What Kareem Hunt got X amount of games a few years ago. Tom Brady for deflating footballs. Ben Roethlisberger got 4 games for alleged rape, you know? And like, you know, and again, Deshaun Watson's actions are not, I'm not comparing them to Roethlisberger, and there's a pattern of poor behavior. But when you compare one to the other, one is a violent crime, one is whatever, however you want to say it. And I'm sure, you know, if you look through rose colored lenses of your favorite team, you're going to see it a different way, whether that's, you know, the purple Ravens or the orange, you know, Browns or the black and gold Steelers. But it's still, at the end of the day, the NFL appointed an arbiter. She came up, you know, read all the CBA agreements, all this and that, all the conduct policy, came up with six games after a lengthy, you know, process after 3 days of court testimony. And she comes back with six. The NFL then appeals to themselves, which is very frustrating.
And then Goodell, the wussy, hands it off to Bob in accounting to make the ultimate decision.
And exactly. And Bob in accounting is formerly an NFL employee. I can't think of the guy's name, but he helped them write the personal conduct policy. So it's basically like the NFL is going to get what it wants. Right. So, which makes me very leery as a Browns fan that we are not going to be seeing much of Deshaun Watson. The counterpoint to that, I have heard, the reason that this is kind of dragging out, and I'll get to the Deshaun Watson apology here in a minute, is that there might be some negotiating behind the scenes going on. You know, the NFL wants a full season. Deshaun Watson's camp, they want, you know, they wanted obviously zero games, but, you know, they were going to have to come up with some. Her settlement was six. So maybe if you add up the 17 plus the six, plus the zero that they wanted, what is that? 23, you divide it by three, you're about that 7-8 game range.
And that's what
it's like, you know, and maybe, you know, he has to pay a fine because last year, technically, he didn't play. Well, he didn't play last year, but technically it wasn't a suspension. But if he pays back that money that he made during last season, you can say, well, that's a suspension. We're going to levy that fine. We're going to give it to women's groups, whatever it might be. And then I think that would make the NFL look a lot better. And, you know,
the money part, I don't understand because like who gets the money part? Like,
well, I never understood that with fines. I don't think the money goes to, like, it goes to the NFL, and I don't know if it goes in escrow or whatever, but I believe most of the time that money is donated to charities.
It's supposed to be punitive, and usually the amounts they send are like $10,000 for doing whatever. These guys are making $20 million a year.
Exactly.
$10,000 isn't doing anything to stop them from the behavior.
Exactly. Well, I think they're gonna impose a multi-million-dollar fine. Deshaun Watson, I believe, made $10 million last year. So if he were to, you know, and with his money, what he's going to be earning over the next 5 years, $230 million, I think you can sacrifice $10 million to get back on the field, and it's not going to change your lifestyle any. You know,
the money's going to be the lubrication he needs to get back on the field.
It might be. All right. Let's go to his apology that was issued before. And now this was strange. Like, I actually was out of town, so I wasn't able to watch the game. And being a preseason game, it wasn't the top of my list. I did catch the highlights of the first couple drives. But Deshaun Watson put out a statement, and I'm sure by his people and the Browns people and some lawyers was crafted in a way that they wanted it to sound. But I'm going to just read what he said. So he says, look, I want to say that I'm truly sorry to all the women that I have impacted in this situation. He's using the pronoun I, so he is taking ownership of this, even though before he says he feel like, you know, he didn't disrespect or, you know, any women. So he said that in the pregame interview. The decisions that I have made in my life that put me in this position, I would definitely like to have back, but I want to continue to move forward and grow and learn and show that I am a true person of character, and I'm going to keep pushing forward. He also admitted that he was in counseling. So he was getting some counseling and getting some help for maybe some of these off the field behaviors that he was prone to. So just some thoughts on that, Joe? What do you think about Deshaun Watson's apology since he's issued that?
See, two things. I think he does have a problem. I mean, this has got psychological things. So much like, you know, Josh Gordon, that he just couldn't stay away from that impulsiveness.
Stay off the weed.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you and I can consider, if we didn't want to do something, it would be pretty easy, but I can't frame it around somebody who has a problem with that.
Right.
And you know, number two, I'm sure that kind of behavior is super easy to get away with. And in fact, it probably happens way more than Deshaun Watson.
I'm sure.
And it just stays behind the radar. I don't think he was very smart about it.
Right.
By the density of how he was doing it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think he's not alone there.
Yeah. And I agree. And I think we all know someone in our lives, and believe me, I'm not putting them in this camp of illegal activity, but certain people, you know, out there, no names, please, but have addictive behavior, whether that's to a drug or alcohol or gambling or me, I can't drink enough coffee. You know what I mean? It's right. Just like simple things like that. Little vices that people might have are out there. And I think, you know, I think this was twofold. One, the timing was interesting because of this is going to the NFL and it's, you know, the decision process is there. But two, it's also maybe the counseling and maybe taking some ownership, and maybe it's a little bit of bullshit too. I don't know. Could be all three of those things, but you know, I think, what do they say? I've never been through the 12-step program, but they say the first step to fixing a problem is admitting you have one. So if he's owning up to his own behavior and, you know, apologizing to these women and maybe taking some action off the field to improve himself and in the community, because by all accounts, the people at Clemson, the people in Houston loved him before all this came out. And then, you know, obviously this is a black eye for him, a black eye for the league, a black eye for the Cleveland Browns. But I think, you know, kind of one of those things, if he can go and fix this behavior, I think there's only one unsettled civil lawsuit that's out there.
I bet you one season and the league forgets about it. If he can get through this, they got a short attention span when it comes to
that. I almost think for him and the Browns and the NFL, it might almost be good if the season is about halfway, and then he can kind of come back in the midst of a season when there's so much other stuff going on. And then you play those games. Yeah, there's always going to be whatever that first game back, whether it's the first game of a new year or week 9 or week 10, whatever
it might
be. By
the time we're out of playoff contention.
Yeah, exactly. We hope not. But, you know, it's just one of those things.
Singers
though.
Today. That's what I got. Singers.
It's like no matter what, though, there's always going to be that first game back, you know, and it's just
because they'll make a big deal about it. The commentators will talk about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And but, you know, like with Kareem Hunt, does anyone talk about that anymore?
No.
Maybe once every now and then. But no, with Roethlisberger, I mean, he was celebrated by those Steeler fans and the NFL. He's going to be a Hall of Famer someday. You know, Tom Brady got in no trouble for faking a retirement, trying to get ownership of the Miami Dolphins, part ownership, and try to make his way there. You know, there's a lot of off the field stuff that happens all the time. And
there's a Buffalo Ravens that murdered someone.
Oh yeah. Let's not forget about Ray Rice, who went out and won the Super Bowl and, you know, hoist the Lombardi trophy, which everyone in the NFL plays for. And yeah, that's a great example. It's just like, there's so much of this stuff. And this is not a league of, you know, I know everyone wants to clean up their image and have like a, you know, clean cut image. It's never going to be that way when you have thousands upon thousands of employees, but I can understand the cleaning it up. And, you know, if you make a mistake or, you know, you do the crime, you got to do the time kind of thing. But, it's like the whole point I was trying to make is, make a decision already, you know, like get this over with so the Browns players can go forward. The coaching staff can, you know, Jacoby Brissett has finally been taking snaps with the ones now, you know, so it's, you know, maybe the Browns make a trade and bring somebody else in. So it is what it is at this point. I just felt like that needed talked about. And
and if you didn't see that first quarter, man, he was on fire in that first quarter.
Well, let's get to that right now. So good transition. Let's go glass half full or half empty with this situation. So the Browns win 24-13. They were down 13-0, go in, score 24 unanswered points. Again, I did not watch any of the game live, so I didn't have a good feel for it. I was down in Florida, actually, but I was more in the Tampa Bay market, not the Jacksonville market. But again, Deshaun Watson issues a pregame apology. So, Joe, on that pregame apology, are you more of a, hey, that was good, or, you know, I think he did it for the wrong reasons. Half full or half empty on
I'm going half full. Yeah.
Okay.
It was due.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so like you had said, too, he was 1 for 5 for 7 yards, but there were 2 drops in there. So
your boy freaking Schwartz, he better get his stuff together.
Well, we're going to talk about Anthony Schwartz here because he was targeted 3 times. The first play, he gets open. He just can't freaking catch the ball. There was a movie called Necessary Roughness way back when, late 80s, early 90s. And Robert Loggia's the coach, and he's like, don't throw it to Stone Hands. And that's how I feel like Stefanski would be on the side. Like, don't throw it to Stone Hands, or that kid on Little Giants who, like, you know, has to wear all the stickum just to, it's like Anthony Schwartz. Yeah. You got world-class speed, but you can't catch the ball. Like, that's half the battle. So,
and if you ask Baker Mayfield, he would say half of his troubles last year was freaking drop passes.
Yeah. Agreed. So I am glass half empty on Anthony Schwartz, the Browns wide receiver room. Now on, what was the game on Friday night? They did not play Amari Cooper. You got to put that guy in bubble wrap until the season starts. He's elite. He's your number one wide receiver, maybe top 10 to top 15 wide receiver in the league. So at the top, they are very solid at wide receiver. Then your number two is looking like Donovan Peoples-Jones. Right. Okay. Should be a solid performer, but needs to step up in your number two role. David Bell, the rookie who we have not seen much, should probably be your third guy. And they're counting a lot on Anthony Schwartz to be that third or fourth receiver. So to me, that wide receiver room, I'm a little half empty on, because I don't know if you can count on any of those guys besides Cooper. You know, again, DPJ, I think in his career, in his first 2 years, he only has like something like 90 targets.
Well, I'll tell you though, if in years past that we had our number one that would have had 90, 70% of the passes and he would catch it and he would do his thing, if Cooper comes through, he's going to make all those other wide receivers look good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, but again, too, if you have Deshaun Watson, he's going to make all those other guys look better. He's going to elevate their play. But Jacoby Brissett, not quite the same type of quarterback, not quite, and obviously not to the level of Deshaun Watson skill wise.
So good in that, on that practice field though, man.
He's really hooking up with those guys. And this week will be a big test for the Browns. They're going to have a game with the Eagles on Sunday. You're probably not going to see any of the starters on Sunday because the Eagles are coming into Cleveland early. They're going to do a couple like inter-squad scrimmages in Berea. So I'm guessing that will be first team against first team there. And then you get your controlled reps in a controlled environment. And then on the field, it's like, let those guys that are fighting for third and fourth string positions. You might see a couple of the backups in there, but that's probably what we're looking at.
Now, do you
I'm just
after seeing our second and third string quarterbacks, do you feel solid in those two guys, Rosen and Dobbs?
Well, Rosen, no. I haven't seen enough of Rosen. And again, I didn't see the game, so I only was watching, I only watched some of the highlights. So Josh Dobbs, by all account, looked really, really good.
I'm in Dobbs camp, for sure.
So, I mean, if he's your number three, you're not going to find a much better third string quarterback. And he was with the Steelers, so he was with the winning organization the past few years. So he is he has some sort of like NASA background, like some sort of space background too. So this guy is a legit genius. Maybe just doesn't have quite the physical tools as some of those guys in front of him. But if he can be a quarterback in that room to learn and develop and maybe have to come in for a series or two, I think you're okay with that. You probably, again, don't want him playing like a full game if you don't have to. He might be there to be able to spell Brissett if, you know, Brissett, you know, God forbid, like sprained an ankle or something like that. Come in for a little bit, let him get taped up, whatever it might be.
And I really think this height advantage, I think we underplay that because we've had 5'10 quarterbacks for forever.
Yeah.
But I think 6'3 and with Watson, he's probably ever been a 6'2.
You know who's a tall quarterback though?
Who's that?
Brandon Weeden.
No. So I just strike him.
No. But I get it. Like, but you know, in that, they're in that mold of those athletic quarterbacks that aren't just straight drop back passers. They can move a little bit. They can make some things happen outside of if a play breaks down, yeah. Which is kind of what we're looking for.
As a kid, Bernie Kosar was the giraffe.
He was, yeah. And Bernie is maybe the most beloved quarterback the Browns have had ever, maybe the most beloved player, but he was a statue back there. We can all agree. But he made things happen with his arms and his brain. Yep. And you know, that's what he did. And he got the job done. So if the way the NFL has trended now, if you have an athlete at quarterback that can be a good processor, make good, quick decisions, you can move the ball and make some good things happen. So I think once the suspension comes down, I just like almost keep looking at my phone. I feel like it's going to happen like any day, any minute now.
I think it's tomorrow.
I think it has to happen this week. Yeah. Like the NFL.
Before the preseason kicks or preseason games kick off on Thursday.
Agreed. So we will see with that. Now I want to go to, so we're going both glass half full on Josh Dobbs. Glass half empty for me, and this is a really unfortunate thing, is center Nick Harris. Goes down on I believe it was the second play of the game with a torn ACL. And then yesterday, his name is Dawson Deaton. He was a seventh round draft pick out of Texas Tech. So he was kind of an experimental. He probably would have been a practice squad guy, but would have been your backup center. He goes down with an ACL. So two Brown centers have ACL injuries. So they're out for the whole season. You bring in Nick Posick in the offseason, who was Russell Wilson's starting center in Seattle, but not to the level of Nick Harris, who they've been grooming the last 2 years to get on the field. And you let J.C. Treader go in the offseason. So I think the Browns need to bring in another center, whether it's to back up Posick or maybe make a trade for a higher caliber player, because that center, they don't get a whole lot of credit, but they are generally the quarterback of the offensive line. They're making a lot of calls, a lot of reads, and it's just a very important position on a very valuable front line for the Cleveland Browns. So unfortunately, glass half empty on that for me. A great play, probably the highlight of the game, the feel-good play of the game. MJ Emerson, who was the Browns' first pick of this year's draft, who was a third rounder, came out and just stole the ball straight away from a Jags receiver, returns it for a pick six. He looks like the real deal. He is a very tall, lanky corner, but the Browns' defensive backfield, those corners, they are loaded with Denzel Ward, Newsome, Greedy Williams. You got this kid Emerson. You got AJ Green back there. They had another guy, Herb Miller, make an interception. I didn't even know who Herb Miller was, honestly. I think he might have played a little garbage time last year for the Browns or been on their practice squad, but they are very happy with their top five, top six in the defensive backfield at corner. And then, you know, your safeties, you add right into that. And, they're looking pretty good in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, so. I think Greedy has to really show himself this year.
Yes, agreed. And really, even though it's his third year in the NFL, it's really only his second because he missed his full rookie season with an Achilles. And then the final feel-good kind of story from this game I took was Jerome Ford, the running back from the University of Cincinnati. First went to Alabama, then transferred to the University of Cincinnati, turns into a fifth round draft pick this past year. Breaks off a 41 yard run, but he went for 10 carries, 52 yards and a touchdown. Also had four receptions, 45 yards and a touchdown. So kind of the Browns do it all guy in the, again, it's preseason football. We don't want to put too much weight into this. Some people think, you know, Deshaun Watson's 1 for 5 is like the world is falling, or, you know, the sky is falling. It's like, it's a preseason game for a guy that hasn't played in 19 months. And there was 2 drops in there. So, right, you know, at worst he should have been 3 of 5. So it is what it is.
On that Ford guy, I had deja vu with this.
Yeah.
I swear last year on second preseason game, there was a running back that I didn't know anything about, blew it up like for one game and then fizzled out, and I never seen him again.
That very well could be true.
So that's why I'm not over investing in this one, because again, that deja vu reminded me that
Jerome Ford's a guy that's going to be around, because you have Nick Chubb locked up for the next, I think, 3 years, but he's going to be on the roster at the very minimum for the next 2 years. Kareem Hunt, though, in the final year of his contract, kind of requested a trade over the weekend, but then kind of backed off of that.
Do you think that's a money thing, or do you think that's a jumping off the ship because he sees chaos?
I think a little bit of both. Okay. I think those are both great points. I think, you know, he's making, if he plays in every game, he'll make somewhere around the $6.5 million mark. That's a lot of money, especially when you're paying Nick Chubb like $12 million a year for at running back. Those guys, I don't want to call them a dime a dozen, because they're not, especially when they're on that level of a Nick Chubb or a Kareem Hunt. But Kareem Hunt, I think, looks around the league and probably is like, I'm as good as, you know, X, Y, and Z player from this team, that team, that team. And he could be probably a starter on, I'm just going to throw out a number, probably 10 to 12 NFL teams out there. I'd have to look through the rosters, but I know he could be a viable starter for, let's just say, 10 teams in the NFL right now. And, you know, if you're a starter, you're probably making upwards of, you're making more money than he's making right now.
Right.
So in Cleveland, he will never be that feature back as long as Nick Chubb is there. But with him and Chubb, that 1-2 punch is just so lethal and so deadly.
Well, think about it this way. He announced that he's got interest in leaving. He blows it up this season with Nick Chubb and puts up amazing numbers.
Yeah.
End of the season, or before the end of the season, he gets locked into another contract where he's making maybe $10 million if he plays his cards right.
So right.
Might be just a strategy.
Well, and a couple things with Kareem Hunt to factor in too. The domestic violence issue off the field, where that cost him half of season. He got released. That could have cost him a big long-term free agent contract. So he probably loses a little bit of time and money there. He's hurt half of last season, so doesn't put up, you know, good stats last year. And, you know, again, playing behind that second fiddle to Nick Chubb. But like you said, play out your contract, put up some good numbers and see what you can do.
That's exactly right.
You know, I'm not saying he's not going to get traded, because I think that could be a possibility. But, you know, running backs, you bring in a guy like Jerome Ford, you're grooming him to be that second back soon behind Nick Chubb, or possibly take over. D'Ernest Johnson is another guy that could be a trade candidate, because the Browns really, if you consider it, have 4 solid running backs,
right.
Which is not a luxury most teams have. You know, a lot of teams are searching for that lead guy, and then, you know, whoever can fill in the backup role. The Browns have 4, I would say 3 legit number one, and then a really solid looking rookie in Jerome Ford. So
and I kind of knew when you had like OBJ and Landry, they wanted out because they were being underutilized and they just didn't like being there. When I heard Kareem Hunt, it didn't feel like he's a guy that would be too unhappy with his current position. I think that he's good because he gets mixed up with Chubb, and that 1-2 punch is something that, you know, they're getting a lot of accolades for. And again, I think it's complete strategy.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And I don't think the Browns want to trade him. And Kareem Hunt, I think it is a little bit of a ploy too. He is from Cleveland, you know, went to school at Toledo, got drafted by Kansas City, brought over by John Dorsey. And then, you know, so we'll see what ends up happening, but he's also getting, the shelf life for a running back is not the same as the shelf life for a quarterback or a wide receiver or a defensive back. He's 27. Usually a lot of those guys don't make it to age 30. So he might have four more good years left in him, or three at most. You know, it's just one of those things. We'll see. But, you know, NFL, a lot of people say, what does it stand for? Not for long. And you got to cash in on your opportunity. So part of me, you know, I don't want him to leave. I want him to be with the Browns as long as he's healthy and happy and is getting paid. But I can understand it from his point of view as well, right, too. So
you know what pisses me off? Let me tell you.
You know what really grinds my gears?
You know, so you got a player in Nick Chubb who works hard, follows the rules. He's a team player. Mm-hmm. And like the attention that he gets is like 1/100th of all of the shit that goes on with like a Watson or anything else.
I
totally wish that those people would be paid attention to.
I agree. But if you would rank right now the most beloved players on the Cleveland Browns, where would he rank?
Oh, number one. As far as
so, and I think that's a very, you know, I think that would be true with a lot of Browns fans too. So he might not get like the shiny, you know, like story about him and stuff like that, but he is a guy that continues to produce year in, year out. He is quiet, but people love him. And, you know, so I think if you do the right things, you work hard and it shows itself, you're going to get rewarded for that. And he's already been rewarded with a nice contract.
Well, I think the NFL's image, though, is they need to do more about profiling those players, even the players that go out and help with kids, you know, the football teams and kids and the charities and whatever. That's the image that they need.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's such a good point that, you know, the NFL and their image, they really need to highlight guys like Nick Chubb, and couldn't agree more. All right, let's go to one more thing with Roger Goodell and the Clown Show. They are putting the Browns. I saw this image and I was just like, this is so cool. If you're a Stranger Things fan, you got Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and I'm guessing that's probably Mitch Trubisky up top in, you know, riding the bike from Stranger Things. And then you got Deshaun Watson in the upside down kind of waiting. He's waiting in Roger Goodell's upside down. So why is it August 16th and we don't know our quarterback situation? I just want to reiterate that point because it's really frustrating from a Cleveland Browns perspective. So Joe thinks it's happening this week. I do too. We all know, like, some of our predictions, you know, it's like Sex Panther. 60% of the time it works every time. So we will see how our prediction comes to fruition, and we'll go from there. Now let's switch to one of the other teams in Cleveland, the other team playing baseball right now, the Cleveland Guardians.
Look at that.
The Cleveland Guardians, the youngest team in baseball. And I'm going to take you through some of their roster and how young they are. So the Cleveland Guardians sitting at 62-54. They take 2-3 from the Twins, or from the Toronto Blue Jays, excuse me, over the weekend. They split yesterday with the Detroit Tigers in a doubleheader. They're back in action tonight. They have a 2-game lead over the Minnesota Twins and the Chicago White Sox, again, sitting at 62-54. Now, I had mentioned the Guardians are the youngest roster by age in Major League Baseball and, listen to this, Triple A Baseball, which is incredible. So their average position player, whatever you want to say, 26.1 years old. Their average pitcher age, 26.5 years old. No one is even within a full year of that, which is crazy. So Tyler Freeman sitting at, he's shortstop, just called up, one of their top prospects, 23 years old. Andres Jimenez, 23 years old. Owen Miller, currently playing mostly first base, 25 years old. Josh Naylor, who I would have thought was a lot older than that, is 25. Ahmed Rosario is only 26. And Jose Ramirez, kind of the old guy, at least from a, you know, position player standpoint, 29. So pretty solid there.
But how the heck did they do that, man? They totally clear the decks of high dollar players. They bring all of these young guys, and they're still in freaking first place.
It's well, one, we have to thank that we're in the American League Central, because the Yankees, if we were in the American League East, I think we'd be like 12 games back or something like that. They're still the wild card, and they're still all that. But yeah, we're lucky we're in the division we are in. However, you're right though. But you know, with all these trades, trading Clevinger, trading Corey Kluber, trading just a bunch of other guys, the Indians/Guardians have really maintained a winning culture. I think they have the fifth best record in baseball over the last like 13 years, which is amazing because they are such a small market, the fourth lowest payroll in all of baseball. But they keep churning out these young players that keep producing, and you got to give credit to scouts, their, you know, front office and people like that, because, you know, those guys are making these determination on, you know, like Frankie Lindor, is he worth this much? No. So what do you get? You go out and you get Andrés Giménez, you get who's an all-star this year. You get Ahmed Rosario, you get a couple other pitching prospects that are up on their way. So you get a bunch of those guys. Let's go to the outfield. Will Benson, 24 years old. Oscar Gonzalez, 24 years old. Nolan Jones, 24 years old. Stephen Kwan, 24 years old. And Miles Straw, 27 years old. So the key thing with that I thought was great, too, for the Guardians, they locked up Jose Ramirez long term. And he took, however you want to say it, he took a discount. He's going to be making like $25 million a year. But he could have got and commanded a lot more money on the open market. And so he was like, well, this is where I'm happiest. They seem to have a good culture. And I think a lot of that goes to Francona, the manager, who does a great, great job with these guys. Some people are like, okay, Terry, you can retire, but you know, don't overlook the effect he has on this team. All right. And then let's look at the pitching staff, just some of the younger guys. This isn't obviously all of them, but this is some of them. Emmanuel Clase, and an all-star closer, only 24 years old. You picked him up in the Corey Kluber trade. Tristan McKenzie, 25 years old. Nick Sandlin, a reliever, 25. Sam Henches, a reliever, 26. Karinchak, 26. Shane Bieber, 27. Savale, 27. Plesac, 27. Cal Quantrill, 27. So your starting rotation, you got four guys that are 27 years old, and you have Tristan McKenzie, who's 25. So a very, very young, formidable staff for the Cleveland Guardians. Pretty awesome. So I want to take you real quick. Excuse me. Major League Baseball just put out its 100 top prospects. Now, keep in mind of how many teams are in Major League Baseball. You have all these teams, and the Guardians have 9 of the top 100 players in their top 100 prospects. So Daniel Espino, he is the number 10 ranked player. He's a pitcher by Major League Baseball. You have George Valera, who coming in at 29. You have Gavin Williams at 73, Gabriel Arias at 75, Brian, I believe it's Rocio at 80, Tyler Freeman, who's now up with the Guardians at 81, Logan Allen at 93, Nolan Jones, who's now up with the Guardians at 94, and Bo Naylor, who, by the way, is Josh Naylor's brother, at 98. So he just crept in to the top 100. So a pretty cool list right there for the Guardians. And just like Joe said, they're doing great things with, you know, trading away these guys, keeping the payroll low, and then hopefully when it's time to pay up, they can keep some of the right guys around and maybe trade some of the other guys away. Now,
usually on your slides, I follow everything, but yeah, there was a barn on that last one. What the heck was the barn about?
Down on the farm. Down on the farm. Like they the farm system, you know.
All right. Now, I got it.
If we ever do a Bob Evans thing, I'll put a little barn on there too. But yeah. I'm glad you noticed that. You know, I take time to put these little details in there. As long as someone notices it, makes it all worth it for me. So real quick, just check in with college football. It starts in a couple weeks. The coaches poll came out recently, last week. And, you know, the AP poll just recently came out this week. But they look very, very similar. Alabama at one, Ohio State and Georgia both at two and three, receiving some votes. Clemson is at four and Notre Dame is at five. That's a look at the top five. Now, on Ohio State's schedule, they're going to be playing, as the preseason rank goes, the number five Notre Dame Fighting Irish to open the season, the number six Michigan Wolverines to close out their season. If you remember, they knocked off Utah in the Rose Bowl, who's the preseason number eight team. But then also on the schedule, you got number 14, Michigan State. You have number 20, Wisconsin. And then if you notice, it's interesting, Penn State is not in that preseason top 25, but I think before the season's over with, they will be in that top 25. So just a real quick look at the college football coaches poll as it just came out recently, and college football will be here before you know it. Now, before I go into the last segment here too, I do want to remind you, high school football is on its way. We usually have Steve Leslie on. Steve is the color commentator for YSU football, and also does some great stuff over at YSN. He usually gives us a lot of his power rankings and preseason guys to look out for and top teams and stuff like that. So hopefully on Thursday we'll be able to get him on and talk a little bit of high school football as it comes out. If it doesn't happen on Thursday, we're going to work that out where we try to get him weekly throughout the season as the season unfolds. Now, final segment I want to get into is last night the show Better Call Saul came to a conclusion. Better Call Saul is the prequel TV series to Breaking Bad. A lot of people love Breaking Bad. Better Call Saul was more of a slow burn, but to me, one of the best written, best film, best acted shows on TV. So I came out with a top five Tuesday list of just some of my favorite shows from this part of the year. So so Better Call Saul right up there. It was the season and series finale this year. Stranger Things season four came out this year and lived up to all the hype. It was great. The Sopranos ended in 2007. I had never seen it, but it is considered by most the best television show to ever be on TV. And I finally, I think I started it back in March and finally finished it a week or so ago. And just unbelievable, unbelievable show. And a lot of Youngstown connections in that show, a lot of Youngstown vibes in that show.
So I got to ask
just you, very good. Yeah.
The diner, what happened?
Oh, so you,
what do you think?
Okay. Here, I'm going to
ding the bell.
Okay.
Rings.
So I'm going to pause real quick in case anyone listens later. This is a spoiler for the next 5 seconds, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Now, spoiler alert. In The Sopranos, at the final scene, by the way, they're playing Journey, Don't Stop Believing, which is great. I think he's dead.
You think he's dead?
Yeah.
Think he got smoked?
There is a guy that comes in a members only jacket. Mm-hmm. And previously, this guy had one of the guys in his crew, his name's escaping me. He doesn't let go to Florida. He wants him to still stay in. He's wearing a members only jacket. Mm-hmm. That guy ends up like hanging himself, and because he just wants to get away. He wants to get out of this life, wants to live a better life in Florida. And it just, the members only jacket vibes give to me, make it think like, I don't know, but like, who is that guy? Is he related to him? Does he work for the other family? But either way, I think he was killed. And something interesting that I kind of wasn't sure. I went back and rewatched. When he walks into the diner, he kind of sees himself sitting there. So he's getting like the point of view of him looking at himself. Mm-hmm. So it almost thinks like, is this, like, is he really there? Is this a dream? They do some weird episodes on there with like some dream sequences and stuff like that. So to me, it's like, he's either already dead and seeing this as it happened, or he gets killed. So,
okay.
What say you?
Same thing.
You really?
Got smoked. Yeah.
Okay.
I think you said if you're writing that show, how do you kill off one of the most beloved characters? And that is really the only way that you don't have anarchy.
And he's kind of an anti-villain because he's a bad guy. He's not a good guy,
but he's
lovable.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. He's a Walter White. He's the anti-hero.
Right.
But he makes the show so good. And so I think we're on the same vibes as that. That's very, I'm glad you thought that too, because I wasn't sure how to quite interpret that.
But I have read like every like fan kind of depiction of what everything means in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they go pretty deep down the rabbit hole.
Do they?
And the song that was playing and the waitress that was in there and the guy that walked through the door and the bell and all of that had like sort of like references that suggest like five different paths that it could be. But
interesting. Okay. And I'm sure there's some, they always kind of like tie The Godfather and Goodfellas, and they always kind of tie that into a whole, bow there. And I feel like it's got a lot of the same vibes with Tony.
Yep.
And by the way, Meadow, learn how to freaking parallel park a car. You live in a big city. So that just, I mean, she could have made it in there a lot sooner.
Did I tell you that I met Meadow?
No.
Yeah, on our RV trip, we went to the, one of the state parks out there.
Yeah.
And she was walking the same trail we did. We got posed with a picture with her. And
Jamie Lynn something. Yeah. Jamie Lynn something. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's cool because like in the show, I kind of relate to it a little bit because she's the same age as I am in that show. So it's kind of cool to like get some, like, I would have probably been doing a lot of the same stuff she was. So it's kind of neat. But great show. If you have not seen The Sopranos, go watch it. Go rewatch it. It's well worth it. I feel like that's a show you can probably pick up at any point. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of character depth and stuff like that, but you can watch it and get right into it. It's pretty great.
We should have a show where we take some of the shows and movies that did that to you, did a not ending it, and they have some stuff to it, and see if we can get into some conspiracy.
I love it. I'm 100% in.
All right, cool.
100% in for that. And then just to wrap it up real quick, another series that ended, Jason Bateman was the lead in Ozark, and just a phenomenal show there. Some people, again, didn't love the ending, but I thought it was fitting. Ruth in that show had another spinoff series, not a spinoff, but another show on Netflix called Inventing Anna. It was really highly recommended. I really love that one. But, Ozark, the whole cast and crew was great. And then Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. Had to throw in a sports one in there, but just a bunch of really, really good stuff that has come out this year and plenty more. I know House of the Dragon is coming out this Sunday. That's the Game of Thrones prequel, which should be awesome. And just so many good TV shows and movies out there. If you have time, you know, I like to catch up on the stuff in the winter. Here and there at night, watch an episode of something. But Better Call Saul ended last night, and it definitely will be missed because that is a fantastic, fantastic show. And Bluey, for any parents out there that have kids that are younger, highly recommend Bluey. Can't get enough of that. It's on Disney Plus. So I think that season, newest season just dropped. So plenty of good stuff out there. And I do want to say one thing about the movie Nope, because I did see that. When I walked out of the theater, I didn't love it. But the more I've gotten away from it, I have really come to be like, I think I might like that movie. The more and more I'm like away from it, I'd like to go back and rewatch it. But a different spinoff on kind of like an alien UFO type movie. But Jordan Peele does an amazing job there. And then final thing, you know what? No, I'm gonna save it. So
by the way, the writer or the creator of The Sopranos said that Tony Soprano died.
Oh,
it's official.
Oh, okay. Well, it's no spoilers there then. but let me tell you one other thing, and we can't play it because it's you know, probably copywritten or whatever. But there is a trailer out right now. I don't know when the movie comes out. It's coming out in very soon. It is the scariest movie trailer I have ever seen in my entire life. It's called Smile. Smile.
Okay.
Just Smile. And
sounds happy.
It is.
It cannot be scary.
It is the opposite of. It is terrifying. And I don't know. Maybe the movie is going to be terrible. But the movie trailer was terrifying. So, and like, I get chills thinking about some of the stuff on the movie trailer. So I'll just leave it at that. And let you make your own judgment, but go ahead and check out Smile, the movie trailer. If you have not seen it, I guarantee you will be creeped out. Maybe watch it in the daytime so you don't get too scared or something, but we'll definitely dive more into some more shows and movies, and definitely some ending conspiracies. Yes, too. I like that. So for Joe, I'm Justin. We'll keep you updated on Thursday's show. Joe is heading, hopefully he's back, because he's heading to Mansfield to the reformatory, not to be an inmate, but to go ghost hunting tomorrow night. So check that out on Youngstown Studio. So for Joe, I'm Justin, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing.